Thank you. The lotus feet of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Guru Gauranga Jayate. Some standing in hold us.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Cheva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayamudirayet. Naista Prayachu Padreshu. Nityam Bhagavat Sevaya. Bhagavati Yatam Shloki. Bhaktir Bhavati Naistiki. Before signing Srimad Bhagavatam, which I've heard in the Congress, let us offer respect to the basis under the personality of God in the right. On the Narayana Rishi, the supermost human being, on the Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and on the Srila Vyasadeva, the author, by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering services unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome and unhappy becomes practically restored almost to nil, and transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord, who prays to transcendental him, comes into being established as an irrevocable fact. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26, text number 36. And the title of the chapter is Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. Mridutvam, mridutvam, katinatvam, katinatvam, cha, cha, saityam, saityam, ushnatvam, Krishnatvam eva 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 cha cha itat sparshasha sparshasha sparshatvam 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 tat matravam tatmatravam 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 Navashkata, Navashkata, Pam Katinat Pamcha,
Nidutvam Katinat Pamcha,
Nidutvam Katinat, Nidutvam Katinat Pamcha,
Nidutvam Katinat Pamcha,
Sat, Sat, Satyam, Ushnatma, Sat, Satyam. Ushnatvam eva cha
Satyam
ushnatvam eva cha
Satyam ushnatvam eva cha
Etat sparshasya sparsatvam
Etat sparshasya sparsatvam
Etat sparshasya sparsatvam
Etat sparshasya sparsatvam
Tanmatrapam nivashkata
Tanmatrapam nivashkata
Tanmatratvam nivashvata
Tanmatratvam nivashvata
Nidupam katinatvam cha
Nidupam katinatvam cha
Nidupam katinatvam cha
Nidupam katinatvam cha
Satyam krishnatvam eva cha
Satyam krishnatvam eva cha
Satyam krishnatvam eva cha
Satyam krishnatvam eva cha
Etatsparshashisparshatvam
Etatsparshashisparshatvam
Tanmatratvam nivashvata
Tanmatratvam nivashvata
Anybody?
Vridhutvam katinatvamcha
Saityam
krishnatvam eva cha
Vidutvam, softness. Katinatvam, hardness. Cha, hand. Saityam, bow. Krishnatvam, heat. Eva, also. Cha, hand. Itat, this. Sparshasha, of the subtle element touch. Parashatvam, the distinguishing attributes. Tanmatravam, the subtle form. Navashvata, of air. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Softness and hardness and cold and heat are the distinguishing attributes of touch. It is characterized as a subtle form of air. Please repeat, softness and hardness. And cold and heat are the distinguishing attributes of touch, which is characterized as the subtle form of air. Tangibility is the proof of form. In actuality, objects are perceived in two different ways. They are either soft or hard, cold or hot, etc. This tangible action, in tactical sense, is the result of the evolution of air which is produced from the sky. Mridutvam katinatvam cha satyam krishnatvam eva cha etatsparshashisparsatvam tanmatravam nivashpata. Softness and hardness, cold and heat are the distinguishing attributes of touch, which is characterized as the subtle form of air. Oma jnana timurandasya jnana jnana salataya Chakshuram Milatam Yena Tajmashi Guru Venama Sri Chaitanya Manam Vistam Shaptam Yenam Bhutale Swayam Rupagata Mayam Dutati Svam Patantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadara Shiva Sri Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare
So these are the breakdown of the various elements by Lord Kapiladeva. So these are all transformations. As it says that the material energy is endlessly mutable. There is endless mutation. What the Kapila is explaining by the transformation of the mode of passion, then intelligence takes birth. The functions of the intelligence are to help in ascertaining the nature of objects when they come into view and to help the senses. So, one thing we can understand that all of these elements, these different diverse elements of energy, they are all interrelated in a very wonderful creation. Just like we can see that each one is interdependent on each other. Here, Kapila Muni is explaining the dependency on the various elements. Everyone in the material world is dependent. None of us are independent. So, we have to understand how we are dependent and why we are dependent. We cannot declare ourselves to be independent, because if we were independent, then that means we would be completely free from any kind of need of outside help. We would not be dependent on someone else's creation. So, we can understand with use of the intelligence the actual situation of things. So we can understand that we are dependent upon earth, from the earth, so many vegetables, fruits, so many things are coming out of the earth. They're very nice. Our body also is coming out of the earth. The earth, water, from water, so many juices are coming, so many different types of varieties of things are coming from water. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. Then we can understand, of course, mind, intelligence. So, these elements are within our individual body, and they're also within the body of the universe. So within our individual body, we have a certain amount of water, a certain amount of earth, a certain amount of air. We have, all of these elements are wonderfully balanced in the body. Just like here it is describing about the touch sense, that the experience of the touch is dependent on the subtle form of air, as Prabhupada says. That the tactical sense is the result of the evolution of air, which is produced from the sky. So, the idea of understanding all of these different interrelationships is because one can understand that behind this entire cosmic picture, there is a wonderful designer. There is the design of the Supreme Personality of God. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that all of this energy is resting on me, just like pearls are strung on a thread. Just like if you have some pearls and they're strung on a thread, they are resting on the thread. So there may be many, many pearls. You may have hundreds of pearls. But as long as they are resting on the thread, then you have a very nice necklace. So if you remove the thread, then the pearls are scattered everywhere. You see? They're scattered everywhere. So similarly, all of these elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, they're all wonderfully resting on the thread of Krishna's arrangement. You see? They're wonderfully resting on the thread of Krishna's arrangement. So this is the importance of this spiritual science of Sankhya. Sankhya means to analyze these arrangements of Krishna. The difference between a devotee and a modern scientist is that the modern scientist, he is also analyzing material nature, but without Krishna. His business is to remove Krishna. You see, because everyone has this demonic mentality, envious mentality of God. So therefore this enviousness manifests in demonic mentality, as it says, Maya Aputta Gyan. Maya Aputta Gyan. Krishna says, Namam Viskutina Mudha Pupajante Naradana. Maya Aputta Gyanam Ashurim Bhavamashita. So this Asuric mentality, is very, very strong in everyone, in the individual. So therefore, when we use our intelligence, generally we are using our intelligence in lusty affairs. Just like we see that when the ego is transformed by the mode of passion, the intelligence is manifested in passionate activity. So we're always looking, we want to be very clever, how to gain some money, some prestige, some fame, some wealth. We want some nice position. And you can see how this passionate use of the intelligence manifests in so much so-called economic development. There is so much display of intelligence, just like when you go in a big, big jumbo jet. It's a marvelous experience. You have this huge piece of metal. Now metal is not much use, is it? If you have a big chunk of metal, it's not much use. But by this expert intelligence, they have made a beautiful big bird. Flying in the sky, the bird, this one plane I was on, it weighs 480 tons. You can imagine, to lift 480 tons off the ground is an incredible feat of intelligence. To pick up 1 ton and make it float 35,000 feet in the sky is not a small thing. It is a wonderful display. And then inside, you can sit down in your luxurious seat and you have your beautiful video. Isn't it, Ravi? Now they have individual videos on each seat. New thing, new introduction. Before you used to have to watch the big screen and the devotees used to go, you know, on the way to India to get purified. Or they just sit there going. So now you have your own little screen. So you can watch your little movie and no one's watching you. And even if the devotees in the next thing may not know you're watching because you're just chanting for them. So this is, then you are sitting there 35,000 feet up, and you're enjoying, they're having very nice meals, someone's having a nap, someone's having their favorite liqueur, and someone's having a little chat with their girlfriend or their wife, so there's so many nice things going on. So Prabhupada says that these planets, they're also like jumbo jets, you see? They're also like big jumbo jets. They're also floating much more than 35,000 feet. Huh? They're not just floating dirty, they're floating in a huge space, and they're being held up by this mystical power of God. Who can lift a plane? We are very proud that we can lift up one airplane or many airplanes, but billions of planets. So we read from Shastra, not planets, there are universes, billions upon trillions upon trillions upon trillions of universes. And actually this one is one of the smallest of all of them. It's only tiny. Lord Chaitanya explains that if you had a huge bag of mustard seeds, you know, this one little thing, this universe is like a little mustard seed. Nothing. For us it is a very big, vast thing, but for the Supreme Personality of God, this big cosmic egg, like a big egg, floating in space. Now inside that egg, how much is going on? How much, even in this one building, how much is going on? Isn't it? Everyone's got their own little things going on. They've got their own little huts or their own little room, and they've got their facilities. They've got some nice cake they're going to have later on, and they've got their little cuckoo where they can make some nice curd sabzi or whatever. All of this arrangement. So if you look at it cosmically and what we call macro or microcosmic, there is all expert arrangement. There is expert arrangement because this is the wonderful creation coming from the mind of Krishna. Not even that Krishna has to do anything. He just thinks something and it comes. You see? When we think something, sometimes we get a headache. You see? We're trying to even work out what we're doing now. We get a headache. But when Krishna thinks, so many things go on. So Krishna glanced over the material energy he's described and impregnated it with all of this life. So just like when the impregnation of male-female, the life comes into existence. So when Krishna impregnates the material energy, life comes in. So within this dead egg, the activating power of God comes in. This is described actually a little later on in this also. The universal egg, or the universe in the shape of an egg, is called a manifestation of the material energy. So the different types of universes are there from these seven principles. Let me read this just on this subject. When all of these elements were unmixed, the Supreme Personality of God at the origin of creation, along with time, work, and the qualities of the modes of material nature, entered into the universe with the total material energy in seven divisions. So the Lord entered within those universe from these seven principles, roused into activity. So Prabhupada gives the example, just like when you have a train, they call it shunting. You hit the first carriage, then all the carriages move. So the Supreme Lord is the gives the initial impregnation into the material energy. And just like this example too, when a man impregnates a woman, the act is done, and then everything else takes over, isn't it? Everything else takes over. So this is the wonderful arrangement of God, that simply by his glancing, everything else happens. Huge cosmic arrangement is there. Within that cosmic arrangement, we see that there are so many varieties of display of the Lord's energy. So many wonderful displays of intricacies, each one intricately dependent on each other. Just like the example, which is very nice actually, I like it as an example, is that if you take, for instance, water, we are completely dependent upon water. Without water, you can see the disaster when you have the wrong mixture of water. So water in its pure form is very, very vital to the living entity. Now, water has to be kept pure, because if you don't drink pure water, it becomes poison. Now just imagine, if you can imagine yourself to keep a container of water pure for millions of years, how are you going to do it? Come up with some ideas. Can you come up with an idea, Ron? Come on, you're a scientist. How are you going to keep a container of water pure, 100% pure, for millions of years? Huh? Keep it closed. So, you, in the universe, just like on this planet, there is so much dependency on water, because water is the very vitality of life, and you need water. So therefore, Krishna keeps it preserved with salt. Billions and trillions of tons of salt is there. Where is it coming from? Can science explain? Just like when you go into a supermarket, you buy one container of salt, it's £1.30. So it's not a cheap thing. It's not something which we can say is not of any value. Salt is very valuable. But where is it coming from? Really? Where is it coming from? Huh? But where is science? What can they explain how billions and trillions and trillions of tons of salt is coming? Do they know? But if you don't have that salt, the water cannot remain pure. You understand? You cannot have the purity of water because salt is a preservative, it preserves. But we cannot drink salt. If we drink salt, we will die immediately. And if you pour salt on the ground, you kill all the vegetables. So neither could the salt be used for cultivation. But within its perfect arrangement, salt keeps all the water, even science admits. Even with all the pollution in the world today, water is still 98.9% pure in its actual, in its body. Now, that water requires distilling. And if you want to distill water, how much arrangement you have to make to distill water? It's not such an easy thing. You can't just separate the salt from the water. So therefore, Krishna has arranged beautiful that the sunshine is evaporating the water. Evaporation. Evaporation is a very important part of distillation. Is that the word distillation? That is the word. Distilling. And then, to carry that water, even when you've distilled it, how can you carry it? To carry one bucket of water, this churn of water, is so much effort. I see the devotees, they're killing themselves with fog. All right, whoa, now let's get the water. So when you finally get the water here, you can make use of it. You can't make use of it while it's in the ocean. You can't make, so you need to move it around. So Krishna arranges these beautiful clouds. Clouds, they are carrying billions of tons of water, but they're not strange. They're not strange. They're not falling out of the sky. And then that water comes on the mountain caps. It is stored, like in India. There's so much dependency on the river Ganga, the river Yamuna, the river Godavari, the river Krishna. There's so much dependency, you can't even imagine. So that water is not needed so much in winter. It's needed in summertime, when it gets very hot, 115 degrees centigrade. 48 centigrade, 46. Very hot. So then, the water melts and is going down, just like even the scientists admit that these ice caps on the planet, they're supplying the water. By a wonderful arrangement, the water is being melted at a certain exact precision. If there's too much melting, chaos. If there's not enough melting, chaos. So everything is very perfectly arranged, these interdependencies. So we see how the sun is related with the water. Sun represents fire. Fire is related with water. Earth. Earth is related to the water. In our bodies, just like there has to be so much air, if there's too much air, we go mad. In Ayurvedic science, if you have too much air, imbalance of air in your body, if the airs are mixed up or functioning, there are 10 types of air in your body. You didn't know that, did you? There's 10 types. So if they're malfunctioning, then you get disorder of the wind disorder, you get the imbalance in the mental metabolism. You become mad. So therefore, generally, disease is caused by imbalance of air. That's why you shouldn't drink cold drinks on top of food. Because food is, when it's eaten actually, it needs a mixture of air. Digestive juices and air is the best thing. So you should leave half the stomach empty. That's good advice. Leave half the stomach empty for air. So that you're not bloated. So anyway, we can see that in the body, if you have too much water, too little water, when you get too much water, you get increase of, what is this, mucus. So this, drink the bile, mucus. What is the words again? Kapha, vayu, pitta. These are the three essential ingredients of the balance of life. And all Ayurvedic science is based upon that balance. It's all based on that balance. Everything is about balance. Everything is about balance. If you see the perfect balance in nature, there's a perfect balance. Just like Prabhupada says, when some eggs come out, there's a male, there's a female. If you had only male eggs coming out, you'd have problems. So all nature is always providing the male, the female, then providing, once the bird is born or the human is born, then all of the ingredients are there for his sustenance.
just like if babies come out. In Africa, people are in areas where there's extreme drought or whatever. The baby comes out, what is it going to eat? There's milk. Immediately there's milk. No production is there. You see? No need of bringing up the milkman. You see? Because it's essential that the baby has this vital fluids. So milk is a vital fluid for the child. And everyone knows that the content of the mother's milk has all the ingredients for sustaining life, not only sustaining life, but developing the child. In other words, calcium and all these things are very, very important. And actually they've found that if you don't give a child mother's milk in the beginning, all of the impurities in the body don't come out properly. The milk is also cleansing for the newborn child. So we see that as soon as the baby is born, everything is there. As soon as one grows up, the air is there and you have a nose, isn't it? It's amazing how air is there, but if you didn't have a nose, you couldn't actually benefit from air. If you couldn't breathe in air, if you didn't have a mouth. So you need a nose. Every animal has a nose and a mouth because you need air. Your body needs air, right? You need to taste, so you have a tongue. You need to hear, so you have ears. You need to touch. Everybody likes nice touch. This touching is going on. So you need this tactical sense. So we can understand that there's a very wonderful arrangement between the senses and the objects of sense gratification. So there's this complete arrangement of dependency. We are totally dependent upon the material energy. But in the material world, that becomes the end-all and be-all of knowledge. You see, that becomes the end-all and be-all, because people are not very intelligent. So they're thinking just simply to satisfy the needs, the dependencies of the body, is the all-in-all in life. This is animal philosophy. Animal philosophy. Because actually, it is not a question of satisfying the needs of the body or the needs of the senses. It is a question of understanding why we are dependent. Why and how we are being interreacted. We have been interreacted with the material energy. Because anyone with intelligence can understand there's a very complex interreaction going on. And this is called conditional life. We are born into a certain condition. Within that condition, we function. If we get too much hot, we suffer. If we get too much cold, we suffer. If we eat too much, we suffer. If we eat too little, we suffer. If we, everything has to be done. Just like we can understand that the dependency on the body, we have to go to the toilet. We have to go to the toilet. But if we say, no, from now on, I don't like this, I'll stop. No, you are forced. So these are called Vajra Vegam. Vegam, they are pushing. The pushings of material nature, just like we have the pushing of the mind. The mind is pushing us. The senses are pushing us. By this pushing, so many activities are coming into existence. So what is this pushing? This pushing is the interreaction between the senses and the sense objects. Nature is dictating at all times the activities of the living entity in the material world. So therefore, for the animal, he just carries on according to his nature. If he eats meat, he eats meat. If he's vegetarian, he's vegetarian. He doesn't, a vegetarian animal doesn't just suddenly become a meat-eating animal. We can see very clearly that within the conditions of various species, there is an absolute law that a crow is a crow. A crow doesn't just suddenly become a swan, you see? So on the lower principle of life, we can see that this this material energy is working as a machine. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that it is yantra, machine. That means machine. There is a mechanism, a very wonderful mechanism of nature, which is working. To understand that mechanism is very important. It's very, very important, because if you don't know how it's working, then you don't know how to function. You won't know how to function within it. Just like if you are in a car and you don't know how it works, you're in danger, isn't it? Suppose you think that the gear stick is your steering wheel. So you're going along the motorway, 100 miles an hour, you might move the vehicle. So you're in trouble, because you need to know exactly, for your own benefit, you need to know how this machine is working, because this machine is carrying you. It's carrying you, you see, just like you've been carried. You've been carried by the forces of material nature. You're getting a body, the body is being forced to work in a particular way, your mind is working in a certain way, your senses are working in a certain way, and we can understand that the objects of sense gratification are dictating our every activity, just like people in the material world. They're helpless, they're smoking, they're drinking, chasing after illicit sex, all of these things, they're becoming slaves. They're becoming slaves. Anyone, even the most ardent atheist, will tell you that he's a slave. Just like I met an atheist in New York, and he said to me, he said, this city has ground me down. You know, he knows that the city itself is just grinding him down, grinding him, because everyone knows that they're doing the same old thing over and over again, chewing on the tube, chewing the tube. They get up, they have their coffee, then the cigarette, then this, then the coffee, then the cigarette, then the chat, then the coffee, then the cigarette, then the chat, then the coffee. All day long, some people have 25 cups of coffee a day. They can't stop. All of their activities are out of control. They're not in control. They've been controlled. And because of this control, they know they're suffering. They know they're suffering. Because they know that these activities themselves are a cause of distress. They do not actually give real pleasure. So this atta means that which is needed, that which is required. Everyone is aware that we require certain things. We require happiness. We can all understand that we require happiness. We require preservation. We need to be preserved. We want to exist. So basically those principles are given in the Bhagavad Gita, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. They are the main primal principles of this material mechanism, that we have to eat because the body's senses are required to enjoy through foodstuffs, eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing. So we can understand by this an analytical study of Sankhya that actually there's a difference between the activity and the doer. There's a difference between me and the material energy. So this is the beginning of human life. The beginning of human life is to understand that there is some distinct difference between me and the body. Isn't it, Ravi? The first principle of life. You must know that this body is a machine, and that this mechanical functioning of this machine is ordained by very, very stringent laws. So if there's laws, then it also means there must be lawmaker. There must be someone who created those laws. Laws don't fall out of the sky. Just like you can't say that every day you wake up and there's some new law that no one knows where it came from. You see? Because what does law mean? Law means order. When something is ordained, when something is controlled, they are the regulating principle. Law is that which regulates, just like we have laws. Laws that regulate machines, laws that regulate society, laws that regulate your behavior, laws, these are, and the police are called law enforcement officers. Law enforcement officers, they're there to enforce them, not a question whether you like or don't like. Actually, we see that so many laws, we may not even like at all, but we're forced to follow, isn't it? We're forced to follow, then if we don't follow, punishment is there. So this punishment is the law enforcement officer. Krishna also has his law enforcement officer. That law enforcement is Maya. Maya is there to kick you in the face. To kick you in the face. Just like we are thinking that because we don't see the controller, we don't see the person behind material nature, because we're not aware that material nature is completely under the direction of God, under the direction of Krishna. So we are thinking that there's some impersonal aspect to nature. So therefore, because people are impersonalists, therefore they think that everything is there for their use. Actually, impersonalism means selfishness. Impersonalism means selfishness, because when you think that the most personal thing is yourself, isn't it? Everyone thinks there couldn't be anything more personal than me. Right? Because you're a person. But that personal, so-called personality, is completely selfish. So therefore, that's why in the material world, selfishness is disgusting. People are disgusting. Well, so this is called Kaivalya. Kaivalya means oneness in interest. Oneness in interest. In the material world, everyone has their own little interest. Just like Prabhupada gives an example. If you throw a stone in the water, it creates circles around it. If you throw in 100 stones, you've got 100 different circulations going around it. So, in the material world, on account of being devoid of personalism, each individual is egocentrically involved with themselves. They are completely interested in themselves, and therefore there's conflict of interest. Conflict of interest on an individual level, conflict of interest on a social level, conflict of interest on an international level, even conflict of interest on an interplanetary level. On every extension of this selfish interest causes conflict. My pleasure in the material world is at the cost of someone else's suffering. You see? Everything I do is at the suffering. If I want to eat, I have to kill. So my pleasure of eating, filling my belly, is at the suffering of the poor thing that I'm eating. You see? Because that poor thing also wants to enjoy. Also wants, just like a cow. A cow wants to enjoy. A cow wants to eat nice food and stay in the field. But we come along and we stick it in our belly. So our selfish interest is the suffering of that poor cow. So therefore we understand that this egocentricity is the animalistic nature of the human being, the complete manifestation of false ego. So therefore, what Krishna consciousness is doing is actually becoming, as Krishna says, Mahatmanas to Mampartam, the Mahatma. What is the meaning of Mahatma? Mahatma means great, great, that which is great. So what is great? What is great? Is the material world great in the sense that our tiny little body, our tiny little capacity, is that great? No, it's not great. What is great? Great is Brahman. That Brahman is great because that is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore it says, Atata Brahman Jignasya. Atata Brahman Jignasya means that now is the time to understand Brahman. Now is the time to understand what is Brahman. So here Kapila Dev is explaining how everything is resting in Brahman, how everything is transformation of Brahman. All of the energy is transformation of Krishna's energy. Therefore, we are situated on Brahman. We are situated within that Brahman. And that Brahman is also inside of us. So, therefore, unless we become Krishna conscious, we cannot actually experience the reality of life. We cannot actually experience. Without knowing there's a distinct difference between us and matter, then there's no question of moving beyond the animal propensity. That's why Prabhupada says that anyone who is on the mental platform or physical platform, he is polished animal. He is animal. Because all that he's interested in is preservation and development of his individual ego, his individual body. The body is the manifestation of the false ego. So therefore, that is why Krishna consciousness means to utilize the energy in the service of the energetic. Unless we can take this energy and return it back to its original source, then the energy itself cannot be properly understood. Just like Prabhupada gives an example, that you may have a small screw in a huge machine, a small nut in a huge machine, but even that small nut is part of a complete machine. But if you remove the small nut, it's useless. It has no significance whatsoever. It's just another little nut in an ocean of nuts. You see? So similarly,
We are very tiny. We are only infinitesimal, 1/10,000 parts of the air. We are very, very tiny. If we are removed from Krishna, we are very insignificant. So therefore, our whole struggle of existence is to become significant. I want to be significantly happy. I want to be significantly famous. I want to be significantly achieved in my field of life. I want to have some significance. That's why everyone is there's competition for significance, isn't it? We want significance. But we're insignificant because we in ourselves do not have the capacity to be significant. So what's the difference between the living entity and God is that God is significant and we are not. So just like that little knot is insignificant, but when it becomes part of the huge machine, it becomes very significant. If you take a little knot from a part of an airplane, it can fall off the sky. It can fall out of the sky. You see? So therefore, that knot has significance in relationship with the huge machine. With the huge machine. Similarly, the living entity also has unlimited significance, but on the unlimited plane. He must transfer himself to the unlimited plane of devotional service. So Krishna consciousness is the means and the end. It is the means because by serving Krishna, we are being gradually elevated out of the false egocentric entanglement of the material world. And at the same time, by coming onto the plane of spiritual platform, by coming onto the spiritual platform, we are able to enter into the unlimited realm of Vaikuntha. So therefore, in the unlimited realm of Vaikuntha, we are again significant. As long as we are in the insignificant. Insignificant means where there is no substantiality. The material world is not substantial. It's unwholesome. It's unwholesome. There's no wholesomeness. That's why it's always struggle for existence. Prabhupada said, struggle for existence, a whole human race. Their only hope, the divine grace. You see? Only hope, divine grace. Because by the divine grace of the spiritual master, he awakens the consciousness of the living entity out of the bodily platform, out of the mental and intellectual platform, onto the devotional platform. So that devotional platform is the parabioma, it is the spiritual world. So Kapila is explaining how we are entangled in these 24 elements, the interactions of the material world. And actually our whole existence is simply a combination of reactions, isn't it? If you look at your whole life up until now, it's a combination of reactions. Some guy walked into a disco, met a girl, got married, had kids, boom, dead. If he hadn't walked into that disco or bar, that might not all happen. Something else would happen. So therefore, if you look at your life, because you were born with this family, with this mom, with this dad, and because your dad used to hit you with a belt and your mom used to neglect you, you become a psychopathic killer or whatever. So these are all that the so-called modern psychologists and scientists or whatever, they're trying to analyze what is really just a completely set of actions and reactions between the doer, the instruments, and the object. There's an interaction, I am the doer. The first principle of false egotism, I am, aham, kara. So therefore, as soon as one thinks I am this false ego, this mind, then interaction with the senses. The senses are the measuring instruments by which we try to measure our domination of matter. That's why people love counting their bank account. They love having a big bank account so they can measure. How much wealth do I have today? Oh, am I happy? I've just got another 20 million or whatever. And how many buildings, how many cars, how many people are working for me? Am I doing well? You see? So what is all that? It's simply paper. Millions and billions of dollars is all paper. Paper comes from trees. So if a person had hundreds of trees, I don't think he'd be so happy. But Maya has created all of this illusion so that people spend their whole life collecting trees and they think they're happy. You see? Paper is trees. In Germany during the Second World War, if you had this room full of Deutschmarks, you couldn't buy a loaf of bread. You know that? Because it's all a dream. It's all illusion. Bread comes from wheat. Wheat comes from the seed. Krishna says, I am Ahambijam. I am the seed-giving father. So, we are dependent on Krishna in every way. So, this illusion of Maya, we're not dependent on Maya. We don't need Maya for anything. We need Krishna. Therefore, we call it Krishna Prashada. Devotee means he lives in Krishna's Prashada. You see? And the demon, he thinks it's his Prashada. So, anyway, this is the basic need for understanding how material energy is working so that one can understand that in all circumstances, one is a victim of circumstance. You see? In all circumstances, I am a victim of circumstance. So we have to change our circumstances. One should not continue to remain a victim. Just like when we come to Krishna consciousness, we should not bring our own luggage with us and plunk it here. We have to leave our luggage behind and change our circumstances. We have to change this propensity for polished animalism and enter into the transcendental realm of bhakti, devotional service to Krishna. So therefore we see that in all the examples of great sadhus, that there has to be a change in consciousness. If there's not a change in consciousness, then the whole thing is useless. Useless waste of time. One must change the consciousness. So that no longer are you a victim of circumstance. That's why we stay in the association of devotees, so we don't become victimized by circumstantial pressures. Pressures of the mind, pressures of the belly, the genitals, the tongue. All of these things are invading. They're crashing against us at every moment. Whenever we go outside, immediately these waves of material energy are crashing against us. So Prabhupada said the temple is like Vaikuntha bubble. We live in this bubble of Vaikuntha, devotional service. So as soon as we become slack in our inside the bubble, then the bubble layers get thinner and thinner. So it's this shaky bubble. And then sometimes it pops. There's no more bubble. Then we're completely a victim again. Prabhupada said, as soon as you stop Krishna consciousness, you'll immediately start intoxication, gambling, illicit sex. Maybe meat eating is slower. Most devotees don't. They don't jump back into meat eating. Everything else is. So this is very dangerous, so we have to be very careful. The only reason we're not victims of the circumstantial forces of material nature is because our situation is under the protection. Therefore Krishna says, Mahatmanas tamam patam daivam praptitam ashrita. That I am giving them protection. I have put my umbrella around them, my bubble. I am giving them protection. Therefore the Mahatmas, they are protected by me. And what is their qualification? Satatam Gitayantama. They're always chanting my glories. Always endeavoring with great determination and faith. They worship me with devotion. They worship me with love. So this is Krishna consciousness. And as soon as one loves Krishna, then all of this material energy disappears. Just becomes reduced like the water in the footprint of a cock. This huge ocean that has no shore, Maya, becomes reduced as the footprint of the top. So, finish there. Any questions at all?
Thank you.
You see, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we bring with us a huge baggage of past sinful activities. Now, the thing is that those are accumulated over many, many millions of lifetimes. So we cannot expect that to be free from millions and millions and millions of lifetimes of sinful activity, that it will happen in a moment. That is not our... Therefore Lord Chaitanya says, Mama Jamani Jamanishvara. He's not... Lord Chaitanya is not saying, oh Krishna, I'm there with you in Goloka, I'm enjoying, oh Hari Hari Bo. He's saying, Mama Jamani Jamani, that birth after birth, I will remain. You can trample me, you can crush me, you can beat me, you can kick me, but I'll never leave you. So it is not that Lord Chaitanya's prayers are saying that, I'm here with Krishna, I've taken his flute and I'm running around the trees. No, that is not Vaishnava. That is, our mood is separation. So therefore, in mood of separation, everyone can understand that we are separated from Krishna. And separation means to suffer. Just like if you're separated from your child, you must suffer. You cannot have this feeling of ecstasy when you've been separated from your child, isn't it? Suppose your child is separated from you, and you can't expect ecstasy because you're separate. So therefore you must understand, because of my separation from you, I'm suffering. But that suffering is also another type of sweetness. You see, because the thing is that we understand that Krishna is very kind. He's not allowing us to be separated. What is pain? What is suffering? Suffering is to wake us up. It is to push us back to Godhead. Just like if your child goes, many times you see when people are walking on the pavement, the child goes to run out in front of the car, the mother clips the child in the air. So you may come to the mother and say, why are you doing that? That's very cruel. No, the mother is thinking of the welfare. Oh, you silly child, you'll kill yourself, you'll be crushed. So, little nip is enough for the child to know in the future. If every time I do that, my mother's going to nip me. So the child understands. So this slap, we deserve much more. Prabhupada said when a devotee gets some suffering, he should be thinking, I should have got millions of times more suffering than that. But Krishna is very kind. He doesn't want to over exhaust me. But if we have nice situation, then we become comfortable in material world. This is the problem. That's why a devotee's life is never comfortable. Prabhupada said, you will be tested by fire. You are coming to Krishna, you will be tested by fire, because you cannot enter into Krishna's abode without being tested. You must understand that everything we do in the material world is selfishly interested. Even our spiritual aspirations are selfishly interested. We cannot remove ourselves from self-interest. So therefore, there's a tendency to want to make Krishna our servant. This tendency is there, and there is therefore in Bhagavatam is called Kaitava, cheating religion. That I want God to make my bed more comfortable. I want Him to make my house situation more comfortable. I want Him to sort out all my family problems. I want Him to get rid of all my headaches. I want Him to come and make sure that I've got some very nice food 365 days a year. And when He's finished doing that, He can clean the toilets as well. This is not devotional service. Devotional service means, no matter what you do to me, I am your servant. What can I do for you? So this test is there. Whether we are making Krishna our servant, whether devotional service is for what I call cozy yoga, not bhakti yoga, cozy yoga. Cozy yoga means that I should have some nice cozy position in this world. And at the end of it, I should float up to Vaikuntha and be with Krishna. Very comfortable. But this is not the example of great acharyas and great devotees. They all suffered so much. But they never forgot Krishna for a moment. So the principle is that We should understand, yes, some suffering has come, but this is just like touching the skin, you see? In the material world, Krishna says, the word here is sparshasha, matra sparsha, sparsha. Sparsha means that which is on the feeling, you see? I'm feeling little cold, ooh, suffer, suffer. Oh, Miss Mangalati, stay in bed, you see? Too much cold, let me stay in bed. This is not, no, devotee is thinking, oh, this is... When we were in Edinburgh, it was so cold. So Prabhupada wrote, he said, you are the real devotees. He said, I am not devotee. He said, when I came there, I was feeling uncomfortable. But for you, he said, it is like little tickling on your skin. You have no concern. Let me go on preaching Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada was very impressed by that because it was very austere there, very austere. No eating, sometimes 12, 15 below, and Harinam every day, two of us. Distributing books. So we were suffering like anything, but for honestly and truthfully, it didn't feel like so much suffering because we were getting so much other nectar. So the point is that it's a different type of nectar. But in most religion, we go to God with our, we bring along with us our whole shopping list of problems and he should sort this out. This religion should have done this for me, it should have done that for me. But religion is not there to serve us. We're there to serve it. This is the problem. This is the difference in psychology. We need a psychological change. Krishna is not there to serve us. We're there to serve Krishna. And if Krishna doesn't want to serve us, even for a million, million lifetimes, we don't mind. We'll serve him. Because if you look at the relationship between the Goswamis and Krishna, then you'll see bhakti. Then you'll see bhakti. The Goswamis were living on, Raghunath was eating one piece of butter every 2 days. And Prabhupada said he was so much absorbed in his devotional service, he would forget to eat it. You see, this is bhakti. So there's competition. Then one time Rupa wanted to offer a nice prasad to his brother. They were eating some little dry chapati. He loved his brother so much, Sanatana. He wanted to offer him a feast. So he was meditating like that. And suddenly this young girl brought these foods. Because it was a custom that the village girls would bring food to the sadhus. So she brought these beautiful baskets of foods and everything he needed. So he cooked a very nice feast. The Sanatan. And Sanatan came to take that feast. And when he saw it, he said, oh, Rupa, well, how are you living? You're a renowned sadhu, you're living like this? How are you getting all these foodstuffs? He was bewildered because he knew Rupa was a total renunciate. So he said, oh no, I was sitting here thinking, and this girl came. And she brought these foodstuffs from the village, that village nearby. Oh, what did that girl look like? So he described, oh, you've taken from Radharani. You've taken service from Radharani. You see, so Sanatana was devastated. How would you have taken service from Radharani? How could we tolerate to take service from Radharani? Different consciousness, you see? Different kind. Now most people would think, oh, we got a few vegetables, a few fruits, we had a good feast, Harry Bow. You see? So different consciousness that, oh, I've taken some service from Krishna. Oh. So a Vaishnava is very scared of taking service from Krishna. He's very frightened. Therefore, he's always on the lookout to see if Krishna's slipping in some service. Then he has to be very careful to see, oh, am I enjoying Krishna's arrangement? So he's always on the lookout. And then if he's taking service from Krishna, then that is not. We have to serve Krishna. So therefore, devotional service is a different, it's like a revolution of consciousness, different change of consciousness. How much service can I render to Krishna? And then Krishna sees the effort of the devotee. He sees the anxiety of the devotee. He sees the determination of the devotee. He sees all those things. If you read Brihat Bhagavatam Rita, you see that when... you read that book? You should read that when he arrives in Vrindavan, finally in Goloka, Krishna embraces him. Krishna falls down unconscious out of love. And he gets up again and embraces him again. So the other devotees are thinking, oh, this devotee is causing Krishna pain. Krishna is so much in love. He's so much in love with Gopa Kumar that he's just embracing him and he's falling down and getting up embracing. Tears are pouring down his eyes. So then he says that, I have been watching you, because Gopa Kumar is the jiva going back to the spiritual world. He said, I have been watching you for many, many lifetimes. I have seen everything you have done for me. I have seen the austerities that you suffered. And I've been with you all the time. I've been with you all the time. So Krishna is there. He's with us all the time. So yes, there will be inconveniences, sufferings, miseries, there'll be quarrels, there'll be politics, there'll be this, there'll be that. These are all the beauty of the material world. They're its opulences. You know? They're its opulences. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the opulence of the material world is darkness. Everything should have its opulence. So Maya also has her opulence, darkness. So when you go out at night on the lake and you see this big, big dark egg, that's her beauty. So how can you expect anything from darkness? Just like if you have some dead earth, how can you expect anything from it? Don't expect too much. Only some cold, some misery, some suffering, some old age, some disease, and finally death. Because that's her opulence. So if we're getting anything different or we're looking for anything different, we're an illusion. Mm-hmm. We're an illusion.
Explaining that, but the interaction between the senses and material elements. So we have the nose and the ears and the mouth is there because of the air and the breath. So an evolutionist would say, yes, that's exactly what you have features because you know, you're there and you've got the nose.
So let them make a machine. Let them make a body.
And but my question is, Krishna, he has features without, there's no, he doesn't have an independence on him. So why is it that, why is it that the material body being a reflection of Krishna's forms is dependent on these things?
Yeah, the thing is that, first of all, getting back to the scientists, they say that we have features and characteristics because they're evolution or some sort of accidental, non-descriptive creation. But the point is that the arrangement of the body is so perfectly interrelated with phenomena, so much perfectly interrelated that it could not, even by the most stupidest calculation, it could never be accidental. It is exactly, just like your eyes. Your eyes are perfectly related with sunshine. Perfectly related. Because if you had too much sunshine, you couldn't see. If you had too little, you couldn't see. But you have exact amount of sunshine. So what they say is, oh, this is the only planet that gets enough sunshine. Everyone else missed out. Here is the only one, and where it just so happens that we happen to be the lucky little fellows who also have the only eyes that are perfectly arranged for the perfect sun in the sky to perfectly see. All by chance. There was no arrangement whatsoever. It just so happened that this little piece of thing was floating in the sky, the sun was floating in the sky, the eyeballs were, I don't know, they popped out of nowhere, and they can see. So all of this is all garbage, for one. Because for anything to interrelate with another thing, it needs an arrangement. You need an arrangement. If you want a machine to work according to an arrangement, then you need someone to arrange it. You need someone to design it. You need someone to make it function in that particular way. So one, everything functions perfectly. Now, the reason that we cannot understand Krishna or the spiritual world is because in the material world, in the spiritual world, there is no measurable function. There's no measurable function. Here in the material world, everything is measured by its function, by its quantitative and qualitative existence. So there's a certain quality of function and a certain quantitative function. So your body allows you to experience a certain quantitative and qualitative experience. If you have a body of a demigod, you experience differently. If you have the body of a little ant, you experience differently. You can see this, how an elephant is eating 100 kilos. If you chuck 100 kilos on an ant, you kill him. But because his body is expertly functioned, expertly arranged, so that he can only enjoy that little piece of sugar. He can only, even if he's the biggest ant on the planet, he may be Mr. King Ant of all the other ants, but he can only enjoy his little piece of matter. So therefore, the quantifiable and quality of the body, or any body, is its quantifiable experience. So how can scientists explain that? That why is it that there's so the evolution, yeah, you may say evolution of body, but it's evolution of experience.
sort of gross physical thing. It's all accidental. We're talking about that the consciousness is experiencing through different types of matter, different types of material arrangement. So yes, Krishna, he has no business with quantifiable experience. His experience, his capacity is omnipotent. Omnipotent. He can do anything with any of his senses. He can do anything with his energy. There's no conceivability in God's energy. Here we can conceive things because we measure them with our eyeballs. We measure them with our brain. We measure everything. And because we're always measuring, therefore we're very proud of our measurements. We say that, we can see this in outer space. But why do we need such big telescopes? Because we're stupid. Because we don't have the capacity to see anything. We're just simply trying to extend it. This is called struggle for experience. We are always struggling to experience. And the whole of life is just a big struggle for experience. So why are we so eager for experience? Because we're spirit souls, part and part of the ultimate experience, God. You see? We are part and part of the ultimate experience. But we are counting our little pennies here, thinking that we've captured something. This is miserly. Therefore Krishna says Duratma. Duratma means miserly consciousness. The materialist is the miser. He cannot have Krishna's energy because he's miserly.
I was thinking how the different cultures of the world today, like the communist culture, for instance, they would try to replace people with, say, independent, do this. And previously they would go to God, they would say, you do this, or we can do this, we can do this. So we saw how the people in those countries basically, they gave up their dependence to the state, and they performed all sorts of mad services on the name of this great called state. But whereas in the other cultures, the capitalist culture, they really merchant, you're independent,
yeah.
You've got your senses, you get this, you get that, you know, and how that brought in a completely different, the world of individualists, the person who survived the world. And then you made that point later on, how this is impersonalism. So this is the real root of impersonalism. It's rooted in individualism, the sense of the person, which is the whole consumer society.
Yeah.
It's very
that point is so important to understand, because the whole enviousness of God is to become completely independent. You see, that is the enviousness of God, that I should be independent, because then I become God. Ultimately, just like Ravana, he wanted to be independent of God. He wanted the benediction from Brahma. Give me the power to do this, because he needed to be independent. So he had to get rid of death, he had to get rid of disease, he had to get rid of old age. You have to get rid of these barriers. So therefore modern science is the search for removing these restrictions, removing the laws of nature. They want to remove them, just like the genetic engineering is so that we can reconstitute nature so that they will function as our servant, not that we're its servant. At the moment we're its servant. We don't like that. We don't want to be anyone's servant. Nobody wants to be anyone's servant. That's why when you ask someone to do the dishes, they go, me? Why are you asking me? Ask him. Nobody wants to be servant. We don't want to serve anything. We want to be served. So therefore, this is the root of impersonalism. To want to be served is the root of impersonalism, because the living entity is constitutionally part of Krishna's pleasure. But that pleasure is a reciprocal love of service. So when he removes himself, then he wants to be object of pleasure. He wants to be object of enjoyment. So he becomes actually separated from nature itself also. Because nature is also serving. Nature is serving Krishna. Material energy is serving Krishna. Everything is serving something else. If you study the balance of nature, it's all because it's serving each other. Just like I gave the example, the sun is serving the water by bringing it up, by serving the clouds. So you're taking service from the sun.
You're taking service from the water. You're taking service from the earth. You're taking vegetables. You're taking fruits. You're taking cloth. You're taking bricks. You're building skyscrapers. But what you're doing is you're enjoying someone else's service so that you can be free from service. You see? Impersonal. Whereas the devotee is thinking, the more service I do for Krishna, then the more I'll become personalistic. And that's why a devotee is always serving everyone. Prabhupada said, when you become a devotee, you become the servant of everyone. Because that is the nature of absolutism. The absolute, you become the servant of the environment because you want to preserve the environment. You become the servant of Krishna's, just like we were talking yesterday about family. Yes, you become the servant of your family because that all of these are all part and parcels of Krishna. So you have to look after them, keep them fed, keep them healthy, keep them happy, so that they can serve Krishna. And they can also develop love for Krishna. So we are actually, just like Prabhupada was the real servant. Prabhupada was the real servant. He had no selfish interest. The Goswamis, the real servants. They're all real servants. So this is a revolution in consciousness. Like you say, with the capitalist, what he's thinking is that by accumulation, by increment, by increasing more and more his material assets, he becomes free. But he doesn't, because he becomes more and more impersonalistic towards nature, towards God, towards everything. And that's why you see rich people are very impersonal. Most rich people are very impersonal. They have great difficulty relating with people or anything, because they're so cut off from reality. And the communists is the other side, like you say. They say, let's all, because they're incapable as an individual, so they say, let's all get together. And we'll all be greedy little pigs. You see, those guys are all greedy pigs over there, but we'll all get together, and instead of having one pig trying to do everything, we'll have 50 pigs trying to do everything. So it's all greediness. Ultimately, the basic principle is gain, not service. So Krishna consciousness, the principle is service, not gain. And if gain comes, it comes. If it doesn't come. So it's not that we have to overly depend upon gain as an artificial measurement of our existence. You see, there was a very good example actually in The Economist. They were analyzing how do we define happiness as a society. Now all they've got is the gross national production. How many televisions, how many radios, how many cars, how many chewing gum bars, and how many, it's all of these things that are produced by the society. That is how they gauge happiness in capitalistic society. So they were saying that even though we seem to be gaining more, we actually seem to be becoming more and more unhappy. So they couldn't figure it out. So they said we need a new measurement of happiness, and they couldn't find one. Because in reality, they can only, because of their personalistic nature, they can only depend on gain as a thermometer. You know, the idea that if you gave everything away would make you happy cannot even enter their head. How could you say that, okay, the more we give, the more happy we'll become? It just wouldn't go down. When people go down, that means this country gave 90% of its gross national production away. Now everyone's happy. But in reality, if you realize that Prabhupada said there's only two people happy in this world, one is the hog and one is the saint. And he said the hog is happy because he couldn't do it then. If he wants to eat anything, he eats it. If he wants sex with anything, mother, his sister, his brother, he doesn't care. And if he wants to sleep anywhere, the sloppiest place in the world is his abode. And he said the sage because he's indifferent. Mm-hmm. And in between that, everyone is trying to make this adjustment. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Ki Jai.